I'm going to tell you with a caveat that it doesn't make much difference or doesn't do much to help your running fitness. And I'm going to duck because Steven's going to throw something at me through the screen while I take a sip of coffee. DizRuns Radio episode 432 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to DizRuns Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, don't look now, but the year is already about half over. June is wrapping up, and with it, I mean, that's six months to go. How are you doing on your year goals, your year running goals, your year otherwise goals? Hopefully you're making some progress. Hopefully you're at least close to halfway through. But with it being the end of the month, that also means that it's time for the monthly listener Q&A, the questions and answers episode, where you ask some questions and I try to answer them. And every once in a while, I stumble into a useful answer, a good answer, something that actually helps some folks. And that's what we're going to try to do today. If you're new around these parts, if maybe you know you're new to the show or haven't listened to any episodes in a while, like I said, I do this every month. It's always towards the end of the month, whatever the last either Monday or Wednesday is, kind of the last normal episode of the show gets to be a listener Q&A. And if you want to get your questions into the mix, you can always send them to me at any time, but by far, hands down, the best way to make sure that they don't get missed, because if you send them to me on Twitter or email or whatever, there's always that chance that they get lost in the shuffle. So if you want to make sure that your answers get into the next month's Q&A episode, the best thing you can do is head over to the Facebook group, which you can find at dizruns.com/Facebook. Or if you're on Facebook, just go ahead and search for DizRuns and join the group. I think it's officially called the DizRuns Tribe. Join the group, hang out. There's a lot of fun. I'm posting stuff every day. Lots of laughs and hopefully a good time and maybe a little bit of something that you can learn every once in a while. But somewhere towards the middle of each month, I put a post up that says, hey, here's the post for the Q&A. Put your questions in the comments, and you know, each and every month, usually somewhere between 10 and 15 questions. Sometimes we only have a handful, and sometimes there's been a couple months I think we've crossed the 20 question threshold, which is a pretty big turnout. But obviously, the more folks in the group, the more questions there are, and the longer these episodes might be, or maybe even sometimes break them up into two. But not the case today. But anyway, long-winded way of saying, if you want to get your questions into the future episodes, head over and join the group. I think you'll enjoy it. If you listen to this, you must be a runner. You must enjoy running. And if you enjoy talking about running and shooting the breeze and cracking some jokes and memes and gifs and things of that nature, come join our group. I like to think it's fun. At least I enjoy it. I have a good time when I'm hanging out and shooting the breeze with folks in there. So come join us. Just search for DizRuns on the Facebook, or again, you can go to DizRuns.com/Facebook, and it'll automatically direct you right there. You click to join, you'll be approved, and bada boom, bada bam, you're in, and start the conversations that way. So anyway, so today we got, I think we got 11 questions today, something like that, 11, 10, 11, somewhere in there. All good questions, certainly all good questions. Some that are pretty fun, some that are, you know, kind of more serious and specific to a situation. But hopefully, like I said, hopefully I can give you some answers to these, if these were your questions. And also, you know, if these weren't your questions, but something that maybe you can think about or you can do to improve your running or add to something that you're already doing to make things a little bit more better or a little bit more better. Ugh. Don't let my English wife listen to that. My English boy, I said that wrong, didn't I? Too. I should really edit these sometimes. But you know, whatever. We're gonna let this ride. Don't let my editor, my lover of the English language, wife, hear that I said more better, or I'll never catch the end of it. But anyway, now that I'm trying to dig myself out of that hole and not getting anywhere, let's go ahead and dive in with the questions. The first question this month comes from Derek, who says, I'm taking a family vacation to Gulf Shores, Alabama next month, and my wife and I think it'd be cool to run along the beach. Question is, what do we need to know for beach running? Shoes/no shoes? Is there usually a boardwalk people run on? Anything like that? And side note, I saw Good Morning America share a video today about a shark basically on shore. It was so close. So I will not be going in the water. Oh, Derek. don't be afraid of those sharks, man. They're not out to get you. They're not out to get you, I promise. Although I'm not a big go in the water kind of guy either, especially in the salt water. Just not a big fan of it. Because it gets you wet, and then the sand sticks even worse. And I don't even like the beach, to be honest. But that's not part of your question. So I have spent some time running on the beach. Running the beach over at the Daytona area. Running the beach back home in northern Michigan, on Lake Michigan. So I know a little bit about running on the beach. And honestly, I mean, you know, there's no right or wrong. There's no pas or faux pas. You know, there's nothing you really need to worry about. When it comes to shoes, you can run in shoes or you cannot. My rule of thumb, or the way that I kind of tend to go about it, is if I'm running to the beach, meaning if I'm going to have, you know, some miles on the road, sidewalk, whatever, before I get to the beach, and then, you know, some miles back to wherever it was I started from, then I'm going to obviously wear shoes for that part. And I'm probably going to just keep the shoes on, because I don't want to get my shoes off, get sand between my toes, things of that nature, then try to put the shoes and socks back on to get back onto the road and run, you know, back to wherever I started from. Cause you're just asking for blisters at that situation. Like that's not going to end well. You put sandy feet inside socks and then try to start running again. So, you know, in that type of situation, leave the shoes on. My take is leave the shoes on. You don't have to, it's up to you. But then again, if I'm like parking at the beach and I'm just going to go run down the beach and run back, I'm probably going to go barefoot, because, you know, it is kind of cool to feel the sand, or, you know, feel the sand on your feet. It gives your feet a little different workout. So be aware of that. Running on the beach is difficult. You know, the sand is, you know, the softer the sand, the harder it is to run in. But even if you're on fairly hard packed sand, it's still going to be harder to run on than running on the roads. You know, if you do go barefoot, like I said, it can be difficult on your feet. If you're used to having shoes that are very supportive, you could be giving yourself a potential for an injury there, because all of a sudden your feet are doing a lot of work. So just something to think about. Maybe want to keep your shoes on. As for a boardwalk or things like that, you know, it varies beach to beach. Some beaches have those type of amenities. Some beaches don't. So I'm not positive on Gulf Shores. I'm sure a quick Google would give you the answer to that. But that could be an option. You know, again, there's no rights or no wrongs. A couple of things that I would advise towards or against, or just at least float out there and you can make the decision. It sounds like you're not going to be too worried about running down by the water, but, you know, that is where the sand tends to be packed a little bit better. So it is a little bit easier usually to run there, where it's harder packed sand. It feels a little bit more like running on asphalt or any type of harder ground. So you're not sinking as much. So it's a little bit easier to run. But if you end up down there, if your wife goes down there to run, a lot of times that area is also fairly slanted because of the water movements and the tides and things of that nature. So instead of running on fairly flat ground, you're going to be running on something that's angled from, you know, right to left to right, depending on which way you're going. So just be aware of that. That can obviously change your gait and can cause some problems. So, you know, maybe you don't want to be down there too much, or if the slant is really pronounced, maybe you want to stick to the flat, even if it's a little bit harder running. But if it's fairly flat, then you can probably get away with it. Another thing to keep in mind is that your paces are going to be much slower, and you're going to be working much harder at a slower pace. So, you know, if you're worried about your Garmin, your watch, things of that nature, just accept that you're going to be slow. And it's going to be a hard workout too. So don't just think, oh, it's just going to be my easy run down here. You know, it could be, but it could also be very difficult because of the soft sand. So, you know, just keep that in mind. Enjoy it. It can still be fun, but it is going to be a little bit of a workout. And then the last thing is, I would definitely encourage you to bring water with you. You know, even public beaches, sometimes it can be hard to find a water fountain. And you know, even if you're running early, it can heat up pretty quickly on the beach. So just make sure you've got a water bottle or whatever, you know, something with you, so that in case you need it, you have it, because it's a whole lot better than to, you know, to carry a water bottle and not need a drink than it is to need a drink and not have a water bottle. So, those are some things to keep in mind, but you know, as far as the proper procedures or things of that nature, there's nothing that you have to do or shouldn't do, or nothing that's going to make you look like, oh, there's that guy who clearly has never run on the beach before. Like just enjoy yourself, have fun. If that means you keep the shoes on, keep the shoes on. If that means you want to take the shoes off and get the sand between your toes, go for it. I can almost guarantee you, if the beach is, you know, if you're there early enough in the morning where there's a decent number of people running, you'll see both You know, you'll see some people with shoes and people without shoes. So, you know, don't worry about that. Just enjoy yourself, have fun, and obviously enjoy your vacation too. That's important. Thanks for the question, Derek. So Andy's got the next two questions back to back. His first one, he says, after my long run, he says, this is a first for me. After my long run, I believe I burst a blood vessel or some capillaries. I developed a bruise on my calf muscle below the back of my knee, about 2 inches. It is sore deep in the muscle. After 24 hours of rest, it feels better, but still a little sore. Is this a fluke thing or a symptom of some other condition? I feel like I can continue on with my training and deal with the soreness after my rest day. This is the first time in 5 years of training. This is the first time in 5 years that training intensity is high, or is at least is this high. I think that's what he's trying to say. Maybe it's the first time in 5 years that he's had an injury. I don't know. But his training intensity is high, and he consistently foam rolls and does a strength training and stretching routine on his rest days. Little side note on that. Why are you strength training on a rest day, Andy? You're supposed to be resting, not strength training, resting. Hello. but I know you're working with a coach. So if that's what the coach has you doing, listen to the coach. But I am not a proponent of strength training on rest days because you're supposed to be resting. You're supposed to be allowing your body to recover. Do your strength training on your hard run days because your body's already worn down, already worked hard. You know, hit it with some strength training, and then, you know, on your rest day, give your body really a chance to rest. But I'll climb off that soapbox since that wasn't what your question was about and get more into what's going on. So is this little bruise and soreness a fluke, or, you know, is it something that maybe you should be concerned about? Sure. Could be both. Honestly, it sounds like it's probably a little bit more of a fluke. Like you could have just, you know, when you were foam rolling, if there was some little, you know, knot in there that you were breaking up, that could easily lead to a little bit of bruising, a little bit of discomfort, a little bit of soreness. That wouldn't be anything to be worried about. You know, the big thing is that with your intensity being high, if it is something that's a little bit more serious, if it's a little strain maybe in your soleus muscle, if you're saying it feels like it's down deep, that would probably be more soleus than your gastroc muscle, the outer muscle of your calf. You know, if you're running hard, you're going to know, and it's going to get worse. and so that means you need to shut it down. If it's just a little bit of a bruise, a little bit of you know, some broken capillaries from too much or too aggressive foam rolling and stretching, you know, it's not going to really, it'll be sore for a day or two, be pretty much back to normal, and your running is going to not suffer. You're not going to really notice it when you're running. So that would be my big, way to measure or way to decide is, you know, during those hard workouts, really during any workouts, but especially during a hard workout, if you're not feeling it, probably just a fluke. If it's hurting and it's lingering around, and then your runs make it a little bit worse, then now it's something a little bit more serious and probably something you want to try to nip in the bud and take some time off now, which I know you don't want to hear that, but, you know, better to take a couple weeks now at the beginning of a training cycle to allow it to heal than to try to push through and have to be taken off 2 or 3 weeks at, you know, 3/4 of the way through your training or halfway through your training when it's would be more detrimental to your race results to take the time off then. So, listen to your body as per usual. You know, a lot of injury advice boils down to listen to your body. What's your body telling you? If it's hurting when you're running, then you need to stop. If it's not, then probably just kind of a fluky thing and a resolve within a couple of days. Second question from Andy, tips on slowing down. I'm running my 80% too fast sometimes. This is definitely a problem days after my speed work. I'll settle into a pace and 10 minutes later, I'm a minute per mile too fast. I'm constantly having to throttle down. Dang it, I just like to run fast. So he's trying to get into, it sounds like a little bit of 80-20 running, Andy, which, you know, you've been listening to the show enough. We've talked enough that, you know, I'm a huge proponent of that. I'm a huge believer. And it's difficult. It is difficult to slow down. It is difficult to run easy on, you know, the majority of your time, especially if you're somebody like myself, and I know you well enough, Andy, to know that it's like you as well. You're trying to get faster. You know, you've got big goals. You're trying to improve. You're trying to get faster at different distances. So, you know, logic says we need to run hard. We need to speed up. We're trying to get faster. But, you know, when you look at the science and when you look at the factors behind 80-20, you know, those easy days are super valuable for recovery, for physiological changes to your body, which allow you to get faster. And those hard days, the 20% of the time you need to go hard, you need to go really hard on those days. But the rest of the time, you really do need to dial it back and go easy and not beat up your body as much. Which running easy, you know, is a lot easier for your body. So how do you get yourself to slow down? Well, a couple of things to keep in mind. One, especially this time of year, especially in the summer months when it's hot and when it's humid, I would much rather see people, and something I try to work with my clients to do, to run easy as opposed to slow, to not worry as much about what your pace is on your watch and worry more about listening to your body and how hard are you working. So, you know, when let's just say that your easy pace is 9-minute pace flat. You know, that's kind of where your target for easy is. Well, that's great. But if it's really hot and humid, running that 9-minute pace is going to require a much more effort from your body than if it's, you know, 50 degrees and no humidity. You can do that all day, probably 9-minute pace at that temperature. But when it's 85 degrees and it's 90% humidity at 4 o'clock in the morning, not that I know anything about that, but yes, I do. You know, when it's that pace, all of a sudden 9-minute pace, or when it's that temperature, all of a sudden 9-minute pace is not easy. That's hard. So you know, first things first, I would say to hopefully make sure you're monitoring your pace by how hard you're actually working. And heart rate, you know, if you got a heart rate monitor, that's a great way to do that. But if you're just trying to slow down, trying to make it easier, what can you do? Well, obviously keeping an eye on your watch, you know, and obviously you're aware, Andy, and probably a lot of folks, if you're trying to get into the easy runs and 80-20, probably a lot of folks listening struggle with slowing down. So in those situations, when you know that that's something that you're currently struggling with, you got to keep an eye on your watch. You got to. You can't be only checking your watch every mile or two, or every half a mile or whatever. Like you got to keep an eye on it, because you know that you'll settle into a pace that's too fast if you're not careful. So keep an eye on it. What gets measured gets. I don't know. There's some. Saying about what gets measured gets done, or what gets measured gets corrected, or something along those lines. If you're not keeping an eye, if you're not measuring your watch regularly, if you're not keeping an eye on what your pace is, you'll settle into that faster pace. So always keep an eye on that. And it's the same thing if you're wearing a heart rate monitor. If you're doing heart rate and judging it by that, you know, you might feel like you're running pretty easy, and then you look down and your heart rate's in zone 3 or something like that, and you whoa. Need to back this back. So keep an eye. If you don't want to constantly be looking at your watch, which there's plenty of benefits to not be always looking down at your watch. Most watches, I believe, have a way you can set an alert so that if it gets to a certain threshold, it'll beep at you. So, you know, again, if we've decided that 9-minute pace is what you need to be targeting for your easy pace, or, you know, a certain heart rate beats per minute. Instead of setting your watch to beep you when you get above 9 or when you get, or I guess below 9, when you get above that certain heart rate measurement, I'd encourage you to maybe set it 10 seconds, you know, so let it beep at you anytime you get slower than or faster than 9-10 pace. Or anytime, you know, if your heart rate that you're trying to stand or is 150, just to try to make the numbers easier, you know, set it to beep at 145 so that you have a little bit of leeway, like, oh, I'm getting close. I need to dial it back. And perhaps maybe one of the best things you can do is force yourself to walk a little bit. If you start to, you know, if your heart rate gets up high and it takes a little bit for it to come down, walk. If you're constantly noticing that your pace is getting too fast and you can't get it under control, walk for a minute or two, and that'll give you a chance to kind of reset. Cause you know, you're in that zone where, all right, it's easy to run at 8:15 pace, even though I know I'm supposed to be running at 9, and it becomes difficult to slow it back. Walk just kind of cleanses the palate, resets the internal pace mechanism. So you walk for 30 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes, whatever it might be, get your heart rate back down, catch your breath. All right, now I'm ready to go. And then start going again, and hopefully that'll allow you to get a little bit slower. But it just takes time. It takes practice. It takes being aware of it. Obviously, you're aware of it. You're asking the question, so that's good. That's a good first step. Now, keep working at it. Don't give up. Don't get frustrated. And I hope that you understand. I think you do, because if you didn't, you probably wouldn't be going through this right now. That you will get faster if you learn to run slower. It sounds ridiculous, but I'm noticing it in my running. And I know, I mean, like I said, the science backs it up. It's true. So definitely go easy on those easy days and hammer it on the hard days, and the more you do that on your easy days, especially the more comfortable you'll get at those lower speeds. So hopefully that helps, Andy. Thanks for the questions as always. The lovely and talented lady from Manitoba, from Winnipeg, chimes in. Miss Jen Walton says, how do you bounce back from the quote unquote so close but so far half marathon that I've talked about dozens of times, where I was, you know, aiming to go under 145, which would have been a huge PR, ended up at like 145.04. How do you bounce back from that? And she's asking this a day or two after she just ran her marathon, when she was trying to go sub four and landed right on 4:00:00. So literally 1 second faster and she'd have been sub four. So, you know, you're so close. How do you bounce back? It's tough. I think it's one of those things that a little bit of time, a little bit of space makes it easier. You know, I've talked about it. Obviously you referenced it in your question that I talked about it many times, and I have. And now when I talk about it, like, it's not something that really irks me anymore. Like, at first I was like, ah, you know, never mind the fact that I PR'd by 7 minutes in that race. I missed my A goal, my, if everything goes perfect goal, by 4 freaking seconds. All right. With time, with maturity, I realized that, you know, I had a huge PR that day. Yeah, it wasn't, you know, like if that was my ice cream sundae, like I had everything but the cherry on top. And, you know, like, yeah, it's nice to have a cherry on top of your ice cream sundae, but damn, like, you get the ice cream and the whipped cream and the chocolate sauce and the peanuts and the you're missing, the only thing you're missing is the cherry. It's still a pretty darn good sundae, you know? And so in that case, like as I've looked back on it and had a little bit of distance, you know, like, yeah, I stopped to pour water over my head at one point, which easily cost me 5 seconds. If I wouldn't have done that, I would have been sub 145. But you know what? I ran a damn good race. I had my strategy. I stuck to it. I pushed pretty hard to the end. And I PR'd by 7 minutes in the half marathon. I'll take it. So I say that to tell you, Jen, and to others that maybe have been in a similar situation, or if you find yourself in a similar situation in a fall race or something that's in your future, it's tough at first. It really is. And it's okay. It means it's kind of human nature to be a little bit disappointed, even though things went well, even though, Jen, I know you PR'd in your marathon by almost 5 minutes. You know, but if it would have been 5 minutes and 1 second or whatever, I think it was 4:50 or 4:45, whatever it was, if it would have been 4:46 of a PR, you would have been under four. So it's okay to be a little bit disappointed. It's okay to be like, gosh. But at the end of the day, you had a good, well, I mean, since we were working together, I know a little bit more about it, that it wasn't the best day for you, yet you still had a good day. All things considered, you still PR'd. All right. So, you know, right now probably still hurts a little bit. Next week, it'll hurt a little bit less. And you know, a couple of months from now, or as we get into training for the next race that's on your schedule, you know, all right, it's a stepping stone, you know, and now you use that as a motivation, as something to learn from, and to continue to move forward. So there's no quick fix. There's no easy solution. There's no easy way to put it behind you and say, oh, yeah, well, okay, you know, moving on. You can say that, but it just takes a little bit of time. You know, it just takes a little bit of time. And when all is said and done, you know, you're gonna be under four. You know, when all is said and done, I'm gonna be under 145. I just haven't run a half marathon since then, so you know, that's still my PR. You know, but it's okay. It's okay. You know, I don't know that this helps that much, because I don't know that there's anything I can say that will really help, other than you just got to give it time. And you know, with time and perspective, you know, it'll be okay. Thanks, Jen. And hopefully you're back to running now, and looking forward to working with you again. Just a couple of weeks, we start training for the next race and that BQ attempt. Steven says, if you could build a custom GPS watch, what features would it have and what would you definitely exclude? Your answer does not have to be based in reality. So this is a tough one. This is a little bit tougher question than you might think, because A, I'm not that creative, and B, like, I don't need that much for a GPS watch. You know, as much as I bitch and complain about that piece of junk Soleus watch that I have, which is really terrible. If you're in the market for a GPS watch, don't buy a Soleus. They're not good. But all I, you know, when it's all comes down to it, when all is said and done, all I really want out of my watch is something that's accurate. I'm not convinced that the soleus is perfectly accurate, but it's close enough. You know, it's close enough. So, you know, what do I? So I'm gonna answer. I'm gonna answer your question in maybe three parts. So what are the features that you just have to have? Period. And you know, these are the ones that are probably based in reality. It needs to show me what my total time is. It needs to show me how fast I'm currently going, and it needs to show me how far I've run. So those are the only fields I really need. You know, sometimes it's nice to have maybe total average pace. So like if you're doing a longer race, if you're doing a marathon or something like that, it's nice to be able to glance down and see like, all right, am I on pace? Because maybe my strategy is to start off a little bit slower, and then, you know, negative split my race. So, you know, I want to make sure that my average pace as I'm getting into mile 17, mile 18 is starting to get close to that goal pace that I wanted to begin with, you know? So that's a nice one to have. It's nice to be able to have that option. But it's not necessary. So, you know, the ones I need: time, current speed, and distance. What I definitely would exclude, cadence. Come on. I've talked about this before, but just, you know, knowing people worry way too much about stuff that isn't that important. You know, if you're not overstriding, your cadence is probably good. I know that's a general statement, but it's also mostly true. Where people get in trouble with their cadence, quote unquote, their cadence being too low, they're overstriding. You're just overstriding. That's all there is to it. So shorten your stride, you land with your feet underneath you, which promotes a midfoot strike instead of a heel strike, which I'm a big fan of. And your cadence is going to be about right. And you know what? If 180 is perfect, guess what? 170 is good too. 175 is just fine. 185 is just fine. So people worry too much about that kind of data. And nobody like, here, I'm going to say nobody. I realize that's a blanket statement, but most of the people that I know that like obsess about that stuff never do anything to change it anyway. So it's just extraneous data that looks good and doesn't do anything for you. So that's really about the only thing I would exclude out of most, you know, watches that I see now. You know, it's nice if you can, if I remember with my Garmin, when I had a good GPS, I could have different data fields set and I could just switch from one display to another. So that would be where I would maybe put like average pace on the second screen, so that it was easy to flip back and forth to see, all right, are we close? All right, dial back to just, I want to see where I'm at right now. And then that gets into the one thing that I would really love to have in a GPS watch. And I know my Soleus doesn't have it because again, it's junk. And I don't think that my Garmin had it either, although maybe some of the newer Garmins do. But one of my biggest frustrations with my watch is when I start running. So like maybe I stopped to change a podcast that I'm listening to, or stop to retie a shoe, or just stop to walk because I'm tired and I need to walk for a second or whatever. So I'm mid run, stop to walk for a second, and then I start going again. All right. And I'll go 20 yards or whatever. And I feel like I'm going pretty good. And I look down at my watch to see what my pace is. And it's like, oh, 13:20. Like there's no way I'm going 13:20 pace. Like I'm going somewhere around, you know, 9:15, 9:30 pace. And it still hasn't caught up to how fast I'm going right now. After 10 or 15 seconds, and it takes sometimes 30 plus seconds to get, you know, caught up, I think, with what my pace is. So if I could add some feature to a GPS watch that I don't know that the technology, like, I mean, it might be require like laser beams or something like that. Radar guns attached to your body. But I would love it if you could do instantaneous, this is what you're actually going right now, pace adjustments. You know, it just is a little bit frustrating when you look down at your watch and it's like, all right, is that really what I'm going right now? Or do I need to really, you know, it's just a little bit frustrating. And you know, if it's just off a few seconds, it's not a big deal. But when it's off, you know, like I said, with mine, I know that it sometimes takes 10, 20, 30 seconds to catch up. And it can be really frustrating when you're, you know, trying to stay on pace. And it's like, well, how far off am I? Like, I don't know. So that would be the thing that I would love to add. All the other stuff, you know, different lap features and settings and intervals and all that stuff. That's all nice, but I don't need it. I just need to know how fast I'm going, how long I've been running, and how far I've gone. Those are the things I need. Everything else you can either get rid of, or they just become extraneous and they're just nice extra features, but not that important. So I don't know if that really answers your question, Steven, but I'm not creative enough to think outside of the box for crazy stuff. I'm a simple creature. I just need a simple watch that actually works. And right now I have a simple watch that doesn't really work. So one of these days I'm going to up my game there and get back to, get back to a brand that actually I trust, because I don't trust mine. Andrew, I think this might be your first question. Thank you for leaving a question. I don't think I've called your name for one of these questions before. If I have, it's been a while. So either welcome to the group or welcome back to the Q&A questions. Great question today. He says, what is your opinion of virtual races? It's a fair question. I don't want to say that I don't have an opinion, but I don't care. Is not caring an opinion? They're 100%. I could take them or leave them. I've never done one. I don't know that I have a big desire to do one. I suppose I could get probably roped into doing one. I remember somebody had posted something about maybe doing a Diz Runs virtual race at some point, which might be fun. That might be something fun to do. We could all, plan to do a certain run on a certain, certain weekend or whatever, and post pictures and stuff. Like, that might be something that would be fun to do within the Facebook group. But just in general, signing up for a virtual race where you go out and run whatever distance, and then you submit that you did it, and they send you a medal. It just doesn't float my boat. Just doesn't do it for me. I like the idea of going to a race. I like the idea of racing other runners. I like the idea of a bunch of runners coming together and running the same course on the same day under the same conditions and letting the chips fall where they may, if you will. If we're trying to do a virtual race and it's an actual, like, to me, that's just a glorified training run. If I'm just running it by myself, now I'm paying money to get a medal mailed to me for just a training run. So again, that's just my way of thinking about it. I don't think that they're a bad thing. I know some people that really enjoy them, that maybe don't like the big crowds, but still like to feel like they're doing an actual race. So they do a virtual race. It gives them that sense of, all right, I'm training for this day. I'm going to do this distance. And that's great. I love that. It just doesn't do it for me. So, so that's my opinion, is that they're not for me. But I don't have a problem with them. If it's something you want to do, or if you're in an area where there's not a whole lot of options to run races, I'm kind of blessed being in Central Florida. There's races here all the time of a variety of distances, within just an hour, hour and a half drive of my house. I can run everything from an ultra to a 5K. Not that I would want to run a 5K, but I've got choices. I've got options. But if you live in the middle of BFE, you may not have those options. So it gives you a virtual race could be a great option, a great solution to being able to feel like you're running a race where it becomes something that's a little bit more special than just a training run. So, to each their own. If you like them, go for them or go for it. And, if you want to do something, if you would like me to set up some type of Diz Runs virtual race at some point, let me know. And, if we get a couple dozen people that want to do it, we'll figure out some way to do it. And I don't know. I don't know. We'll put something together. So email me or shoot me a tweet and let me know, or get in touch with me in the Facebook group. And, I don't know, depending on what the response is, maybe we'll try to line something up for later this fall and we'll start working out the details and hash things out that way. But thank you, Andrew, for your question. Sharon's got a good question today. She asks, hydration and electrolytes. Often during the summer months, when I think I've hydrated enough, I end up fighting a headache for the rest of the day after a hard and or long run. I try to bring Gatorade or a similar sports drink with me on these runs, but I'm not a big fan of them. For some reason, they seem to taste better after I run straight out of the refrigerator. What do you recommend as far as strategies and or products for electrolyte replacement? And what about the more natural sources? Sometimes I'll have a V8 as a recovery drink, and I'm wondering if that's adequate. P.S. I do not like coconut water in any form, so that one is off the table. Kind of first, I guess maybe the first part of that question, what are some options, some solutions beyond just Gatorade or Powerade or any of those aids that are out there? I am a fan of Tailwind. So Tailwind, I am technically also an ambassador, so I'm probably supposed to promote that and nothing else, but whatever, that's neither here nor there. I do enjoy Tailwind. It's a powder that you mix in with your water bottle. And then you take it with you and sip it throughout, as opposed to, like having a drink somewhere specifically where you drink a couple of ounces of water and then, or whatever your drink of choice is, and then go on, and a couple miles later you get another drink. With a Tailwind, you carry it with you and you're consistently sipping it. It's got some sugar in it. It's got some calories. I know there was some responses to your question, Sharon. And basically if memory serves, or as I'm looking at it, so I guess memory doesn't have to serve, you tend to do better when you have a little bit of calories and sugar with it, not just something that's sugar-free, but also provides some type of electrolyte. So, the Tailwind could do that for you. It's not really strong flavor. There is a flavor, there is a taste to it, but when you mix it to the right, to the recommended levels of dilution, there's a mild taste, but it's not anything too bad. There's definitely lots of salts and electrolytes in it. You almost, it's kind of a blend of sweet and a little bit salty at the taste, but it's, again, it's not a overwhelming flavor. It's just, there is a little bit of taste to it. So that might be an option. You know, you can also do, I've used Enduro Packs before, which is, it comes like a spray and it's a little spray bottle, and whatever your water bottle is, whatever you're drinking, you just squirt some of that into it. And it provides electrolytes and it's flavor free. Flavor free, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I was going to say tasteless, but it's, you know, there's synonyms there. So that's another option of something you can add to it. It adds some electrolytes and just helps to, it doesn't add any calories, doesn't add any flavor. So that can be good if you have some type of juice or something like that you like, but you want to add a little bit more electrolyte level to it. You know, you can also take some salt tablets, some things that, you know, you can either take a mid run or probably before you run to make sure you got a little bit of extra sodium in your system, so that as you're sweating, you have something to pull from. But, you know, ultimately what my recommendation is going to be is that, it just comes down to trial and error. What works best for you. Tailwind works great for me, but I'm honestly not an excessively salty sweater. You know, if you get really salty when you sweat, if you end up kind of with a little crystallized, a little glittery after your sweat cools off, you've got so much salt on your skin, or, you know, if you notice the white rings on like a hat or on the collar of your shirt, where the sweat is so salty that you actually have some salt, that, you know, kind of crystallizes and solidifies on your clothes after a run. That's a good indicator that you need more salt. So again, whether it's Gatorade, whether it's Tailwind, whether it's Enduro Packs, whether it's salt sticks or salt tabs or whatever the brand is there. I'm not familiar with the brand, but if you search it, you'll find it. Those are all good options. And then, you know, making sure you're having maybe a little bit of extra salt in your diet, you know, nothing, try to stay away from the processed stuff, but, you know, adding a little bit of extra sea salt on your food. Not enough to make it ridiculous, but just enough to add a little bit of salt to your dish. Might also help a little bit. You know, just to keep your salt levels up. As you know, as far as recovery drinks, again, whatever you enjoy. You know, some people swear by chocolate milk. Some people swear by a cold beer. Some people, you know, if you like V8, go for it. I don't do V8. It's not something I enjoy, so it's not something that I would use. But again, whatever works for you. Honestly, I like a cup of coffee. I don't care how hot it is, how sweaty I am. Give me a cup of coffee after a run, and like it tastes good to me. I enjoy it. You know, I don't know that it does much for my recovery, but whatever. Like it's good. You know, so you know, again, do what works for you. Do what you enjoy, and don't be afraid to try some different things. Trial and error is a beautiful thing. You know, and you know, this run, you try this. Does it work? All right. Well, I feel pretty good, so maybe it did work. Try it again next time. You know, maybe the weather conditions are a little bit different and all of a sudden it didn't work. So, you know, take those notes, pay attention, and hopefully you'll find the right mix for you. Whether it's a product, whether it's, you know, whatever it might be, just keep trying different things. And you know, you got a couple suggestions here, Tailwind and, Enduro Packs and salt tabs, that may help you get started if you haven't tried any of those before. Julie has a question that says, how much slower should you run your long runs compared to your speed work runs? It depends, Julie. It depends. How's that for a vague answer for you? The reason I say it depends is because, obviously it depends on your fitness level. It depends on what your speed runs are as far as what type of workout that you're doing. There's a lot of variables in here. So, you know, your long runs should try to be easy. All right. They should mostly fall on the easy scale, though, you know, depending on what you're doing and how experienced you are as a runner, you can mix in some kind of workout into your speed run. So we do that with folks from time to time, where we'll do easy, hard, easy, where you start off easy and then you run hard for, you know, a few miles in the middle and back to easy. There's a whole host of options that you can employ, but let's just say you're doing just a standard easy long run. You know, I like to say kind of level 3-4 on a scale of 10, with 10 being like you can't hardly breathe, like your maximum all out sprint. You know, a good litmus test for making sure you're at the right level is, can you talk? You know, if I can have this type of conversation where I can talk in a sentence while I'm running, I'm pretty good. I'm in that, you know, 2, 3, 4 area, which is where we want to be. If instead when I'm running, I'm kind of talking like this, I'm running too fast for an easy run. That's not easy. That's not where you want to be on those long runs, on those easy recovery runs. You know, that's probably getting in the neighborhood of 5, 6. That's getting into be like tempo area pace. And that's not where you want to be for your easy runs. So, you know, do the talk test. Even if you're not talking to anybody, even if you don't, if you're running solo, you know, can you sing a couple lines from the music that you're listening to? Can you reply back to something stupid I say when you're listening to the podcast and you're out for a run? If you can speak in a sentence or a few sentences in a row, your pace is good. Now, compare that to a speed work. Again, it depends on what your workout is. So are you doing something short and really fast, like, you know, 1 minute hard, 1 minute recovery? Are you doing quarter mile repeats, which are, you know, both going to be kind of in that 8-9 range of almost full out red line hard? You know, that's going to be about as fast as you can run those type of workouts. Is it a tempo run, which is, you know, like I said, 5, 6, maybe a 7, you know, which is difficult, but you can, you know, you can maintain that type of pace for at least a few miles. And again, you can talk, even if it's just a few words at a time, you can still get a couple of, you know, you can still get a couple of thoughts out, or a couple of words out of your mouth with each breath. So, you know, there's no good way to say you should be 2 minutes slower or 3 minutes slower or 30 seconds slower or anything like that. But you know, cause there's too many variables at play, but as long as you can speak in a sentence or two, that's a good pace for your long runs. And then everything harder, the longer the distance or the shorter the distance, the harder you're going. And, you know, up to, like I said, if you're doing something fairly short, that's a minute to 2 minutes of hard running, that should be almost all out. I would never really encourage somebody to go straight to 10. But definitely a solid 8 to 9 for some of those really, really hard workouts is a good place to be. And honestly, you know, kind of getting back to Andy's question a little bit, worry more about your effort than your pace. The pace will take care of itself. If you're doing your hard runs really hard, who cares what the pace is? You're doing the intensity right. If you're doing your easy runs and your long runs when they're supposed to be easy for your long run at an easy level, then you're good there too. And the pace isn't as important. So I'm a big fan of running by effort as opposed to pace. Sure, we look at pace. I still look at my pace, but I also check in, how do I feel? Does this feel pretty comfortable? All right, so then we're good, you know, no matter what the pace happens to be. Hope that helps, Julie. Hope that makes sense a little bit. We've got 3 questions left. The first one comes from Katie. And she actually also kind of has 2 questions here built into one, but that's all right. We'll count it as just one, Katie, so no worries there. She says, if it's not too late, which it's definitely not too late. You got your question on, so we're good. Curious about splitting up a long run into 2 runs in the same day. Is that as effective as doing all of the miles at once? And then also, what if, or, you know, how do daily walks of like 1 to 3 miles help, hurt, impact your fitness? So the first part there, splitting your long runs up into 2 runs. That's fine. A couple of things that I would add into that though. If you're going to do that, and when I've had clients that have had to do that for various reasons in the past, I'm a proponent of adding at least a mile, maybe 2 to the total distance. So, just to try to make the numbers a little bit easy, say you're going to do a 20 miler, but you just don't have time in the morning to get all of your miles in before, you know, you have to deal with the kids or go to work or whatever the case might be. So go ahead and do, instead of breaking it up into 10 and 10, go ahead and do 12 in the morning. But then instead of doing 8 in the evening, then do 9 or 10 in the evening. So you're ending up with 21 or 22 miles. But because of that break, it's not nearly as taxing on your body as doing all 20 at once. And because of that, I like to add just a little bit more to give a little bit more push, a little bit, something a little bit harder, because that 20 miler is going to be a hard run if you're going to do it all at once. So, you know, we do want to stress your body. We do want to help you to improve and gain some confidence in being able to go that far. And if you just do 10 miles and 10 miles, like, it's not the same thing. So I guess that gets into the part, is it as effective as doing all the miles at once? Yes and no. Like, it can help you. Certainly, it still helps you. You're still getting the miles in, but there's just something to me, and maybe it's as much mental as it is anything else, but there's just something about doing that full long run all in one shot that isn't the same as doing half and half or splitting it up in 15 miles and 5 miles or whatever it is. It's just not quite the same. There's something to be gained from doing it all at once, at least a few times in your training cycle. If you can't do it, you can't do every long run all in one shot, break them up. That's fine. You're going to improve. Your fitness is going to get better. Like I said, maybe add an extra little mile or two in there so that you're doing a little bit more volume than you would have planned to do, but you're breaking it up so it's not as hard on the body. But if you can try to get one or two of those long runs in the build up to whatever race you're doing, you know, half marathon, same thing. You're doing 10 or 11 miles, but you can't get all those in, instead of doing 5 and 5 for a 10 miler, do 6 and 5 or something like that, you know? So the math works out whatever type of distance you're training for. But I do like that. As moving on to the second part of your question there, how do walks of 1 to 3 miles help your running fitness? Steven might be throwing something at the, at his phone right now, because I'm going to tell you that I'm going to tell you with a caveat that it doesn't make much difference or it doesn't do much to help your running fitness. And I'm going to duck because Steven's going to throw something at me through the screen while I take a sip of coffee. So there are benefits to walking, you know, going on long walks on a regular basis. It's time on your feet. And I know Steven talks about time on his feet all the time. And I'm not disagreeing with that in the slightest. It's good for you to have that time on your feet. It works, you know, the muscles in your core, the muscles in your legs, in your feet, all of those things. It doesn't matter that you're not running. Going for that long walk is good for you. What it doesn't do is necessarily help your running fitness in terms of your cardio fitness, in terms of, you know, the type of exertion, the type of forces that your leg muscles have to do in order to run. I mean, it's different. Walking is different than running. And I don't think where your question is going is, you know, are they the same thing? I don't think that's what your question is, but, I don't know exactly how I want to answer this without digging myself into a further, you know, put myself further in the corner than I already am. There's benefits to doing it. If you can be on your feet, it's going to help you. Again, it's going to help the little muscles in your feet, your core, your hips, all those muscles. They're going to be more, you know, it's going to help improve their endurance. It's going to help improve their stamina. But it's not the same as running. So, yes, we need to run. Yes, we need to be on our feet. We're made to stand up. Our bodies work better when we're walking and getting movement. So it's good for all those reasons, but I don't know that I want to say that it helps your running fitness as much as I want to say it helps. It's just good for you. It helps your fitness, period, if that makes sense. So, Steven, stop throwing stuff at me. I hope that we can still be friends after that answer, because I think that we're trying to say maybe the same thing, but I don't know. But hopefully that helps for you, Katie, and thank you for the questions. Thank you for the questions. Two left. We got Jill first says, what's the best way to travel with a foam roller? Heading to a race in Utah in September, first race I ever traveled for, and wants to bring the foam roller. What do you do? How do you bring the foam roller with you? So there's a few options. And a few folks kind of chimed in with some suggestions, which I loved as well. If you have, so like the foam roller that I have, the one that I love is the big, like 36 incher. So it's, you know, 3 feet long. It's the big black solid foam. Love it. It's great. Doesn't travel well. You know, it doesn't travel well. So when I travel, what do? I don't take the foam roller. I'll take my massage stick, which is shorter, easily fits into a suitcase, easily fits into a carry-on bag, a backpack, a purse, you know, whatever. It might stick out, but you can carry it. You know, it's not going to be a problem. So I'll take that, or I'll take my lacrosse ball and do some massage work that way, which obviously a little ball fits very easily into any suitcase, carry-on, whatever the case might be. If you're really set on taking a foam roller, if you have a foam roller that's like 12 inches or 18 inches, it'll probably fit in your suitcase, no problem. And a couple people on the thread said, you know, if you have a hollow core foam roller, you know, then you can stick it in your suitcase and then stuff things inside of it. You can stuff your watch, socks, underwear, whatever clothes into it, so it's not even taking up space so much, just inside the hollow foam roller, and then, you know, it's in your suitcase and it's not taking up space and whatever, no big deal. So that's another option, but, you know, depending on what foam roller you already have, that might not work for you. So if you have a shorter one, you can just stick it in the suitcase, no big deal. If you've got that monster 3-footer that I love, traveling with it is kind of a downfall. But again, you can get the massage stick, you can get a lacrosse ball, you know, you can get a bunch of other different types of things that are much easier to travel. And to be quite honest, I don't think that any of those products by themselves can meet every need. So, you know, if you have a foam roller and you're like, gosh, I don't know, like, do I really need to get a massage stick? Like, do you need to? No. Are there things that the massage stick works better for than your foam roller does? Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, you might find that having both of them, you know, there's some overlap. There's some things that you can do about the same, but there's some times when it's a lot easier and a lot more effective to use the foam roller. And there's some instances where it's a lot easier and a lot more effective to use the massage stick. And there's some instances where it's a lot easier and a lot more effective to use the like a lacrosse ball or a softball or something like that. Not like a softball, like the actual ball that people use when they play softball, which is hard, you know, but something about that size that you can, you know, really dig into your hips and your glutes and get your piriformis with, or really break up something and break up a knot if you have one, or, you know, there's uses for different things along the same vein. So, you know, if you don't have one, you know, if you just have the foam roller and you're looking to travel, maybe get a massage stick, because now you've got the best of both worlds and you can use them both interchangeably. And when you travel, you got one that's much easier to travel with. So just a few thoughts. You know, you can definitely take it. And if you got the big one, you could probably just carry it on and put it in the overhead bin. You know, you'd look like that guy, but, you know, I mean, whatever. People do it with their skateboards. People do it with their guitars. So, you know, same type of thing. You could probably do that and get away with it just fine. Last question comes from Jason. This is going on a little bit longer than I thought it was going to be, but you know me, get a little long-winded sometimes. Jason's question: since it's hot as heck out here in California where I live, currently around 110 degrees, I've been doing a lot of indoor cross training, spinning, elliptical, etc., in place of my easy runs to maintain his level of fitness. So his question: what's your opinion on cross training miles versus actual running miles? Do you consider it as part of your weekly mileage? He says that personally he does. So here's my take on it, Jason. And I hesitate to say that I disagree with you. To the letter of your question, I think I disagree with you. But I think to the heart and the spirit of your question, I think we're on the same page. So I don't consider a miles for miles trade. So, you know, if you're going to run 5 miles today easy as part of a easy recovery day, I wouldn't say that getting on the elliptical and going 5 miles is the same thing. I don't trust the accuracy of those devices. You know, whether it's the treadmill, whether it's the elliptical, whether it's the bike. I don't trust the odometer or whatever the thing that measures the distance on them at all. I've seen too many cases where, you know, I've been on one machine and it's seems like I'm flying, and the next machine next to it seems like I'm running twice as fast and I'm going 3 times slower. I just know that they get the calibration on those things is questionable at best, so I don't trust it. What I do trust is the time. So if I was in your position, if I was going to be doing some cross training inside to try to maintain my fitness levels, what I would do is go, all right, so I'm supposed to do 5 miles today easy. So what's that going to take me? Well, you know, with my normal pace, it's going to take me between 45 minutes and 50 minutes. You know, I'm somewhere between 9 and 10 minute pace for an easy run most of the time. So, all right, you know, pretty easy to do that math. Then I go and I do that type of time duration on my cross training device. So if I'm going to go do the bike, I'm going to go do 45 minutes to 50 minutes on the bike, or the elliptical, or the swimming pool, or the rowing machine, or some combination. So maybe I'll do, you know, 30 minutes on the bike and 10 minutes on the rower and, you know, 15 minutes on the elliptical and call it a day, you know, whatever it might be. But that's how I would do it. I don't think that there's a one way that you have to do it, but I just don't think that you can compare. All right. So I did, you know, I mean, cause if you're doing it on the bike, like you do 20 miles on the bike at the same time it would take you to do 6 miles of running. You know, so you know, when you say 6 miles on the bike is the same as 6 miles running, like, no, but the time could be a pretty accurate, in my opinion, is a very accurate way to compare, or, you know, switch out, sub out, and do what you're doing. So if you want to stick inside, stay out of the heat a little bit, do it that way. You know, I think what you're doing is great. And as long as you're doing, I would say more of a minute per minute, switch instead of a miles per mile switch, if that makes sense. So that's how I would do it. And that is how I do it. So, take it for what it's worth, but whatever you're doing, if you feel like it's working, you know, who am I to tell you to reinvent the wheel? So, that is it for this month's questions. I hope that you, enjoyed them. I hope that they were somewhat helpful, maybe even a little bit entertaining. At least maybe my silly answers, maybe at least were a little bit entertaining, but, again, I hope they helped. And if you want to make sure that you have the best chance to get your questions on next month's show, head over to the Facebook group, dizruns.com/Facebook, or just search for Dizruns, the Dizruns tribe on the Facebooks, and click to join. People have been adding and joining and being part of the group a lot recently, which is really cool. And it's just creating more conversations and more fun in the group. So, come hang out with us, and that's that. So, thank you guys for listening, and hope you have a great rest of the day. And let me know if you want to do that virtual race. Let me know. That's something that maybe we could do. I haven't given it much thought, but if there's a good amount of interest, might be able to put something together. See what happens. So let me know at DizRuns on the Twitter, DizRuns@gmail.com for the email. And this show is DizRuns.com/432. Come check out the memes and the gifs and the fun. And you can leave a comment there as well. Let me know what questions I got wrong, or what answers I got wrong, or what maybe you thought I got something right. You can let me know that too. And until next time, take care of yourselves, and we'll talk soon. See you guys.